Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Va'ed. God is King. These are the words that we say on Rosh Hashanah to accept God as King of the universe, of our personal King. When I often talk to people who may not make it to Shul on Rosh Hashanah, I tell them that if they don't do anything, at least on these 2 days, try to say once these words, God is King. That is basically the essence of the day of Rosh Hashanah. Now, of course, we say in Shul and say this many times along with other things, and I'll try to explain why that too is important. But the essence of the day is God's kingship. We can see that in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, which talks about the order of the prayers, the order of the blessings in the silent prayer. There's a dispute as to when we say the certain blessings. There are as 3 essential blessings in the silent prayer of Rosh Hashanah. We're supposed to say verses associated with Malchuyot, God's kingship, Zichronot, remembrances of ourselves and the Jewish people, and Shofrot, verses that relate to the Shofar. The question is, where do we say those verses of Malchuyot, God's kingship? One opinion is that we say them along with the verses that are associated with God's holiness, Kedushat Hashem. However, the second opinion, which is that of Rabbi Akiva, and is the accepted as halacha, explains that we are supposed to say the verses of kingship associated with Kedushat Hayom, associated with the very holiness of the day. From this Mishnah, we learn that the essence, the holiness of the day, is God's kingship. And indeed, the Rambam brings Rabbi Akiva's opinion as halacha, and he quotes the Gemara as follows. He says, "Umina ra'ui sheyakdimu hamalchuyot v'achrehen zichronot v'achrehen shofrot." It is appropriate that we start all the blessings with malchuyot, kingship, and then go to remembrances, and then talk about the shofar. And why? So he explains, as the Gemara does, Amru lefanai malchuyot kedei shetamlichuni aleichem. Say the verses of kingship in order that you accept my kingship upon yourselves. Zichronot kedei sheyale zichronchem lefanai letova. Say the verses of remembrances in order that your remembrance will come before me for the good. Uvameh, and how will that happen? Be'shofar, through the blowing of the shofar. So, we understand that the shofar is somehow this tool which brings our good remembrance before God in order that we make him our king, or while we are making him our king. Now, the Gemara is quoted here in the third source, Masechet Rosh Hashanah Tav Tet Zayin Amud Aleph, and after it states the idea of the verses starting with Malchuyot and ending with Shofrot, it says here on the third line, Amar Rabbi Abahu, Lama tokin b'shofar shel ayil? Why do we blow a shofar of a ram's horn? So before the Gemara answers, the Tosfot here explain from a different Gemara. It says, Kaimalan k'Rabbi Yehuda de tokin b'shel ayalim k'fufin k'dat paskinan hatam b'Gemara b'Rosh Hashanah k'mo sh'kofe ish dato kacha yoter tov. So the Tosfot explain, according to the Gemara, elsewhere in Daf Chaf Vav of Rosh Hashanah, that the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, which is the accepted opinion, is that we should blow a ram's horn that is bent. And the more that it's bent, the better it is, because the more that we bend our will toward God, the better we have accomplished the task of making him our king. So the shofar, in the first sense, is a bent instrument to symbolize how we need to bend our will to God's will, thus making him our king. The Gemara continues immediately after the Tosfot, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tik'u lefanai b'shofar shel ayil, kedei she'ezkor lachem akedat Yitzchak ben Abraham, u'ma'ale ani aleichem ki'ilu akadetem atzmechem lefanai. So, the Gemara says that God, as it were, says to the people, blow a shofar of a ram's horn, which will be a remembrance for you that of the akedah, of the binding of Isaac, and then I, God, will account it for you as if you bound yourself on the altar of the Akedah. So now, the second symbol or symbolic sense of the shofar is to remind us of the Akedah, which is that ultimate bending of our will, or ultimate bending of one's will. And so too, we should aspire to reach that ultimate level of the Akedah. And in fact, by merely blowing the shofar, God somehow accounts toward us as if we have done that very deed. The Chidushei HaRitva explained why is that. So in the little underlined words here, it says, he explains that it's because when we blow it, V'holchin bidrachav ma'ale ani alechem. So he says that when we blow the shofar, it's not merely the simple act of blowing, but that by blowing it, we also demonstrate that we are following God's ways, just as Abraham and Yitzchak followed God's ways at the Akedah. Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Lama tokin b'Rosh Hashanah? Why do we blow the shofar at all? You know, I understand all these nice symbolisms, but why do we blow? Lama tokin, Rachmana Amra Tik'u. Why do we blow? We blow because God said so. And he quotes the verse, Tik'u, it says in the Torah that we should blow the shofar, and that's why we do it. So here you see that blowing the shofar is a chok. It's a decree of the king, and so we do it because it's a decree of a king, and that is why, in fact, we are doing this in order to demonstrate that we have accepted God as king. You accept the king because you do what he says because he said so and for no other reason. That is the ultimate acceptance of the king. That is indeed what happened with the Akedah, and that is what we are supposed to try to bring ourselves to on Rosh Hashanah. Then the Gemara continues, Ela lama mari'in. Why do we blow a different sound, which is called the truah? Mari'in, why do we do that? Rachmana amra amar zichron truah. Why do we blow with this sound of a truah? Because God said so. It says in the Torah that Rosh Hashanah is a zichron truah, remembrance, a day of remembering this sound of truah. Again, it's a chok, it's a law, a decree, which God said, and we do it because God said so, which is the ultimate and perhaps even only way that we can accept God as king, by doing what he decreed. Ela, so now the Gemara continues, says, no, I didn't really mean about those sounds of blowing. What I really want to know is, Lama tok'in u'mari'in shehen yoshvin v'tok'in u'mari'in k'shehen omdin. So the Gemara asks, what I really want to know is, why do we blow the shofar in these sounds of tikiyah and truah while people are sitting, and then again while people are standing? There are certain minhagim, and they were in the times of the Gemara, where a set of shofar blasts would be done while everyone was sitting, and then another set while people were standing in their silent prayer. Today, in many synagogues, people do this by standing on both sets. But nevertheless, the point is, why do we blow so many times? To fulfill the decree of the king, to fulfill the blowing of the shofar that is in the Torah, the mitzvah d'oraita, as it were, we really only need to have one specific set of blasts. Why do we have all these blasts, 100 blasts? So the Gemara answers, Kedei la'arbev et ha-satan, in order to confuse the devil, the Satan. What is that supposed to mean? This is something that has troubled me, and I spoke with many people, it's troubled them. How is it that God's mighty angel, the Satan, can be confused by blowing a shofar? What is that really supposed to mean? So I looked through many, many mefarshim, perhaps 15, 20 commentators, and I really found that there were three that gave some specific and essential ideas. And indeed, if you look here in the Maharsha, so he brings exactly three. He says here, Ayen Perush Rashi, V'Tosfot, B'Shem Ha'aruch, V'Ayen Biran. So he says there are three essential commentators on this issue. And the Maharsha to say that, that's pretty big, because he is really the one of the greatest commentators on Agadot in the Gemara. And he says, if you want to understand this, look at these three. So let's look at those three. Rashi says, Kedei la'arbev shelo yastin, k'sheyishma Yisrael mechabevin et ha-mitzvot, mistatmin dvarav. So Rashi says that the Satan won't yastin. The Satan, the devil, will not accuse us. The essential nature of the devil is to accuse the Jews before God. And so when he sees that the Jews are doing what they're supposed to do, so he doesn't have anything to say. This is very interesting. However, it seems to me that it's hard to put in the don't accuse to the part of he becomes confused. I mean, essentially, he's not become confused. He now sees clearly that the Jews are doing what they're supposed to do. You could say he's confused by that because the Jews don't always do what they're supposed to do. So, but in any case, the Tosfot explain the word explicitly. Kedei larbev et ha-satan, perush ba'aruch, v'yushalmi. He quotes the Gemara Yushalmi. It says, bala ha-mavet lenetzach. There's a verse that says that in the end of days, that death will be swallowed up forever. V'ketiv, and it also says about the end of the days, v'haya b'yom ha-hu yitaka b'shofar gadol. It will be in that day that there will be a great and mighty shofar blast. Kasher shama kol shifura pamachad bahir velo bahir. The first time that the Satan heard the shofar blast, so he became a bit concerned, but not. Kasher shama shnuyot amar vaday zehu shifura de yitaka b'shofar gadol. So when he hears the second blast, however, he says, wow, this must be that great shofar blast at the end of days. And now it's come my time to be swallowed up. I am the Satan. I am the one who brings death to the world. At the end of days, at this great shofar blast, as we read before, death will be swallowed up. And so now the Satan says, I'm going to be swallowed up. So he says, the Gemara says, because of this, now the Satan has become confused, and he does no longer have any time to come and accuse the Jews on high. Now, this is very interesting, but really very strange. I mean, the Satan, this mighty angel of God, has become confused about what day it is. Year after year, we blow the shofar, and we blow them 100 times, and year after year, this mighty angel of God, who can see across the whole world, across the whole universe, has become confused about what day it is, and now he thinks it's the end of days. What can this possibly mean? You know, whenever we read strange ideas like this in the words of Chazal, in the words of the sages, we have to realize that the stranger they are, the deeper they are. And Chazal were not interested in making little kiddie stories. They're interested in communicating deep philosophical ideas. And they do that by jarring us with some what seem like very strange, almost funny kinds of stories, like confusing the Satan with a blast of a ram's horn. So let us try to investigate further by looking at another very strange Gemara, which also talks about the Satan confusing, although this time he is confusing the people. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, Daf Pei Tet, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Mai Dichtiv Vayar Ha'am Ki Boshesh Moshe. What is it talking about when it said that the people saw that Moshe was delayed? The Gemara is referring to the incident when Moshe went up on Har Sinai to get the Torah, and he was there for 40 days and 40 nights, and he didn't come down on time, and so the Jewish people said, we believe that Moshe is not around, and we need to make ourselves some kind of intermediary like we did in Egypt, and they made a golden calf. So now the Gemara is talking about how did this all come about. Al tikri boshesh, ela ba'u shesh. He says, don't read it, Moshe became delayed, rather that Moshe came at six. What does that mean? B'sha'a she'ala Moshe l'marom, amar lahen Moshe l'Yisrael. When Moses went up to on high on Mount Sinai, he told the Jewish people, L'sof arba'im yom b'tchilat shesh aniba. He says, at the end of 40 days, at the sixth hour, I will return. L'sof arba'im yom ba satan ve'irbev et ha'olam. At the end of 40 days, the satan came and confused the world. Amar lahem le'Yisrael. So he told the Jewish people as follows. Moshe rabchem heichan hu. He asked them, where exactly is your rabbi Moses? Amru lo ala lamarom. They said to him, he went up on high. Amar lahem ba'ushesh. He said to them, but it's come the sixth hour. V'lo hishkichu alav. The people did not pay attention to him. Met. The Satan tells the people, Moses is dead. V'lo hishkichu alav. But the people ignored him. Here lahen dmut mitato. So the Satan somehow made some 3D image of Moses lying on his deathbed. V'hainu deka'amri lei la'aharon kize Moshe ha'ish. So now the people, upon seeing this vision of Moses on his deathbed, came to Aaron and they said, where is our master Moshe? And they asked Aaron to make the egel. So here we see that just as Satan can be confused, Satan can also confuse the people. And he could make some kind of an image for the whole 600,000 men plus women and children and confuse everyone to the point where they were ready to make an idol in place of Moses because he did not come at a certain hour. Very difficult. A very difficult story. What is this also trying to say to us? The Chidushei Haran, which is the novel points of the Ran of Rabbeinu Nissim, so he brings another way to look at this statement that we confuse the Satan through blowing the shofar. And he says here, כדי להרבב את השטן פירוש להכניע היצר כדכתיב אם יתקע שופר בעיר ועם לא יחרדו ודשטן היינו יצר הרע כדריש לקיש דאמר הוא השטן הוא היצר הרע הוא מלאך המוות. So the Ranz explains, he says, when we're talking about the shofar confusing the Satan, we really mean that the shofar is confusing the Yetzer Hara, that evil inclination within man. And he brings the opinion of Reish Lakish that says the Satan, the Yetzer Hara, and the Malach HaMavid are all one and the same entity. The devil, the evil inclination, and the angel of death, they are all one. There's not these angels, there's not these separate powers. It's all one entity. What are these entities that are really one? If you turn over the page, so I have three sources here. The first one is of the Meiri, and he explains that the Satan, ha-Satan, ha-Mesit, v'ha-Mediach. The Satan, this devil, is the one who tempts us, who instigates us, who brings things before us that we really shouldn't be involved in, and he tempts us to get involved in them. This sounds perhaps like some kind of external angel that we're familiar with when we talk about the Satan. However, the Midrash explains the Yetzer Hara as follows. The Yetzer Hara, it says, Lo ba'u HaKadosh Baruch Hu shenik. Lo bara'o HaKadosh Baruch Hu shenikra tzadik v'yashar et ha'adam b'tzalmo ela kedei liyot tzadik v'yashar kamo. God created man in order that he will be righteous and trustworthy, straight. Ve'im tomar lama bara yetzer hara shekatuv bo ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra minu rav. So now it says, but we also know that God created man with an evil inclination. As it says in the verse, because man's inclination of his heart is toward evil from his youth. So now, the Midrash is trying to ask, if God wanted to make a righteous, straight creature, why did he put an evil inclination in him? So the Midrash continues, Ata omer shehu ra. You say that the evil inclination is evil. Mi yuchal la'asoto tov, amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ata ose oto ra, ata yuchal la'asoto tov. Basically, God is answering and saying, why do you call this evil inclination evil? You're the one who makes it evil. You can make it good, you can make it evil. And then if you look at the bottom line, it says, Uma marim shebarati lotan mamtikin letzorchan, letzorchecha, yetzahara hamasur b'yadecha alachad kama v'kama. The Midrash says, you take all kinds of things in the world, bitter foods, and you sweeten them and make them good. So too, you should be able to take the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, it's in your hands to do what you will with it. The Midrash is saying that the Yetzer Hara is man's power and will and desire to act, to do, to go out into the world and change it. You can use that power however you want. Reason we call it the Yetzer Hara is because it's this desire that we often use to do ra, to do evil. However, that's in our hand. This is just a power. And if we will take this power, we can actually do great things with it. Now, what's amazing about this Midrash is that it's saying that this inclination, which we have a tendency to use for evil, is part of our makeup. It's part of our psychological, physiological makeup. And so the Yetzer Hara is an internal power, an internal function of man. And if the Yetzer Hara is equated with the Satan, so then the Satan too is an internal power. The Satan, the tempter, is not external to us. The tempter is within us. It too is part of our psychological makeup. The Satan tempts us from within. It's really just us. And the Yetzer Hara is the one who is tempted by this tempter. They're both just ways of talking about how we work psychologically. And then how do we explain this in terms of the Malach HaMavet, in terms of the angel of death? So we read in the first command that God gave to man, Adam and Eve, in the Garden of Eden. It says in Bereishit Perek Bet, Vayatzav Hashem Elokim al ha'adam lemor mikol etz hagan achol tochel. From God told man, you can eat from all the trees in the garden. Umi etz hadat tov v'ra lo tochal mimenu ki b'yom acholcha mimenu mot tamut. But from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, do not eat, because in the day you eat it, you will die. So here, God lays out the rules of the game. The rules of the game of creation are, you do what God says, and you continue to play the game. You do go against God's will, you die. That's the essence of the game that we call life. We need to try as best we can to do what God says. And if we don't, so we, by our very actions, bring death upon ourselves. The Malach HaMavet, the angel of death, is within us. Just as the tempter and the tempted are within us, so too are the consequences of following those temptations, which ultimately lead to our demise. And so these three elements are all one and the same together. They're just different aspects of the process. So then the question is, but why? Why death? Why do we bring death upon ourselves? So the Torah talks about what happened after Adam and Eve ate from the tree, and God says, Vayomer Hashem Elokim, Hen Ha'adam Hayah Ke'echad Mimenu Ladat Tov V'ra. Look Now that man has eaten from this tree, he has become like one of us, the angelic or heavenly beings. He's like a god. And so God says we need to move him out of the Garden of Eden. Now, Rav Hirsch explains on this, Shtei drachim nimsaru lebechirat ha'adam. Two paths were laid out for man's choosing. Ladun bein tov lera al pi ratzon Hashem, to determine the differences between good and evil according to God's will. Lekach lavor lo et derech ha'chaim, and thus choose for himself the path of life. O la'achlit ba'atzmo ma tov u'mara, lekach lavor lo et derech ha'mavet. Or alternatively, he can decide for himself what is good and what is evil, and thus he will choose for himself the path of death. What Rav Hirsch is explaining is that man has two things to decide. Basically, he can either listen to God's will and determine what is good and evil according to what God says, or he can be his own moral arbiter. The reason that man becoming his own moral arbiter leads to death is because we don't really know what is good and what is evil objectively. Only the creator of the universe can tell you objectively how the universe works. And this is brought in an idea by the Rambam in Sefer Nebuchim. He says something really interesting. It says here, "Ubesechel yavdil adam bein ha'amet va'sheker." So man determines between truth and falsehood by according to his intellect. And here it should be pointed out that Rav Soloveitchik explains that when the Rambam is here speaking about truth and falsehood, he's basically speaking about moral good and moral evil, as opposed to when he talks in this chapter about good and evil, that he refers to as aesthetic good and aesthetic evil, or bad, what we would say, ugly perhaps. But in any case, what we're saying here is that truth is good, moral goodness, and falsehood is moral evil. V'ze haya nimtza bo al shleimuto v'tmuto. Now this ability to distinguish between truth and falsehood was found in Adam in its perfection. And now if you skip down to the middle where it's underlined, Ubasechel yeida ha'adam ha'emet min ha'sheker. And through his intellect, he was able to distinguish between truth and falsehood. Now if you skip to the bottom part where it's underlined, it says, V'ka'asher mara v'nata el ta'avotav ha'dimyoniyot v'hana'ot chushav ha'gashmiyot ne'enash b'sholel ha'hasaga ha'hi ha'sichlit. So however, when Adam ate from the tree and turned to his physical desires and the imaginations of his feelings to try to have a good time, he was punished by having this ability to distinguish between truth and falsehood become clouded. Now, what I want to say is that when we're saying here punished, it's not really punishment in terms of getting a spank on the hand. It's the natural consequence. When man makes an intellectual decision based on his physical desires, his intellect naturally becomes clouded. And so he is not making a pure intellectual decision. That is what all of advertising is about. When they try to sell you a car, they try to sell you a feeling. It may not be the smartest thing for you to get that car, but you want it, and so now your intelligence has become clouded with your passions. And that's what happened in the Garden of Eden. They saw the tree. It was beautiful. It was good to eat. It was of good taste. And so they ate it. They made the decision based on the aesthetics as opposed to the intellect. And that is precisely what Rav Soloveitchik in the next source explains is the source of all evil. Ma shehevi lenefilat ha'adam hu ha'adafa shenatan lachushani lema'aneg ulemasbi'a haratzon. What what brought man to his fall was the preference that he gave to his feelings, to his pleasures, and to satisfying his desires. Al panei ha'emet, as opposed to the truth. Man, when he sins, is even willing to push aside the truth in order that he can satisfy his desires. Hen, the truth. Hen b'mishor ha'intellectuali, hen b'mishor ha'eti. He's willing to push aside the truth on the plane of the intellect and on the plane of the ethical. That is what happened in the Garden of Eden. We pushed aside our intellect, which God, we knew was that we would bring upon ourselves death, and we pushed aside the ethical, because we knew that God had said this is bad, but nevertheless, we did it. Why? Because it looked good, felt good, tasted good. This, Rav Soloveitchik says, is the essence of all sin when man puts his passions before his intellect. Now, interestingly, the Nefesh HaChaim also explains this very in a similar way, which will bring us back to the idea of confusion. Me'az, it says, she'achal adam etz hadat nigram al yedei zeh irbuvia gdola b'ma'asav. When man ate from the tree, this caused a great confusion in his actions. Shekol ma'aseh ha'adam heima be'irbuvia v'hishtanut rabim me'od pam tov upam ra u'mitapech tamid mitov l'ra u'mira l'tov. He says that by eating from the tree, we have changed our makeup, and now we are confused, and we do things good, and sometimes we do things bad, and we go back and forth, constantly in confusion. Once we have incorporated this desire to fulfill our passions, we no longer see the truth clearly, and so this causes us to constantly become confused. And so now we can understand what those two strange Gemaras were talking about, when the Satan confuses man and when man confuses Satan. Basically, it's all the same. When we say that the Satan came and confused the Jewish people at Mount Sinai, no one external came. The people were in the middle of the desert, their leader gone for 40 days. They began to imagine themselves lost and on the brink of destruction. They despaired, and they went to their passions, to their feelings, to their comfortable zone. What can we do now that we're lost in the desert? Well, in Egypt, when things got bad like this, we made an idol, and we did whatever worships that we did, and we felt better about it. So they went to Aaron, and they said, "We believe that Moshe is dead. This Satan that made a 3D image was just people's internal concerns and fears and confusion about the truth." And so they went to their passions and they made a golden calf, and that made them feel good. And so that is what that story is talking about. And so too, the story that was brought in the Yerushalmi by the Tosfot, that says that when we blow the shofar, we confuse the Satan, and he thinks that it's the time of the Geula. That is us. The shofar is confusing us in a good way. The shofar is coming to our Satan that says, we're confused about the world. We don't really know. Is there really a God? Does he really have a plan? Is there really an end game? A gula? Will there really be a shofar agadol? When we hear that shofar blast time after time after time, it begins to pierce to our souls. It's a sound without words, without rationalizations, without arguments. We can begin to hear the truth. There is a God. There is a plan. There is a gula. There will be a shofar hagadol. And so we can say with clarity and understanding of the truth, Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem yimloch le'olam va'ed.